Light 100.5 WRCH. You're listening to Rich Answers. I'm Carol Vassar Pettit. With me today is Jennifer Vendetti. She is a social worker at the University of Connecticut Health Center in Farmington. It's Mom's Day. And I want to talk a little bit about the bond between a mother and a child. We talk a lot about that bonding when we have our children. Why is bonding so important?
First of all, thank you for having me, and thank you for bringing up this topic.
My pleasure.
I wish we heard more about the process of relationship development. That's really what we're talking about. It's so important because the development of a human being, right, a child or baby, is the development of a personality. It's the development of this person who's going to be critical to our society, of course, critical in the family. So bonding is so important because it's the starting point to this relationship between a parent and a child. And we say, well, how does it start? I mean, is it something, you know, magical that happens at the time of birth? No, not necessarily, right? What is it really? It's really a kind of a series of reciprocal, maybe interactions, let's say, or a series of responses that the caregiver elicits to the baby, right? We're talking about early bonding. So this is just in the first minutes, days, weeks after birth. And what this does is it programs the caregiver and child to be kind of in tune with each other. It doesn't necessarily feel like that in the beginning. It can feel kind of like, oh, am I bonded? I think a lot of parents kind of question themselves, am I bonded? Am I bonding? Am I in a bonding moment? So I don't know that it necessarily feels. I asked some of the moms, my mom's group this morning, what is bonding? And did you have a moment where you felt? And for some moms, they sort of felt like they felt it when there was some feedback from the baby. So of course, early on, you don't get a lot of feedback from the baby. The baby is kind of sending out information or cues, and then our job is to try to be able to understand those cues, right? So bonding is really that connection, and it happens through communication. It happens biologically. It happens in a lot of different ways, but it is the basis of what we call attachment, right, which is a developmental process that occurs between a primary caregiver and a child, really culminates over the first year to 2 years, and that sets the foundation for how this child sees the world, how this child understands relationships, how this child experiences trust. It's incredibly important. It doesn't always look the same between every mother-child dyad or parent-child dyad. It doesn't always look the same. Sometimes you have these moments right at birth where you just feel a connection. But sometimes it isn't emotionally based. It's, you know, you're caring for the baby, you're reading what the baby is telling you, you're responding, and it's a back and forth, and you don't necessarily feel the bond until maybe a little bit later. But you're learning, you're reading, you're trying to understand. So I think bonding is a way of understanding. It does become a connection that you have. And again, it's what sort of brings you together as mother and
baby. It sounds like it's the foundation, really, for a human being, for their relationships, for the rest of their life.
Right, right.
So what happens if bonding does not occur?
Well, if there's a disruption, right? And sometimes there are very early on. It may happen even in the hospital. So the baby and mom maybe have to be separated. Maybe mom needs some care. The baby needs some care. That's okay. Some of the things that moms worry about is, oh, I had some separation or the baby was in the hospital for a bit of time. Is that going to interrupt bonding? The key is to stay proximal to the baby as much as you can, right? Stay close. A lot of times moms worry, oh, do I have a role? The doctors are helping my baby. Yes, you absolutely do. Your role is essential to your baby's well-being and to your baby getting healthy. They do kangaroo care in the neonatal intensive care
nursery. Explain what that is for those who don't know.
Sure. So, you know, the skin-to-skin contact is something that for our first baby, Maybe we've never had that experience, having a baby on your chest, let's say, and your skin is exposed, they're exposed, and you're just connecting. Maybe it's a dark room. Maybe, you know, you're just alone together. And it's this process of just really trying to listen to your body. This is a piece of reflective functioning too, right? Listening to your body, listening to how you're feeling, listening to your baby, and trying to find a moment where you're just being present. And it really does stimulate these positive neurochemicals. And it just really brings out some of that kind of biologically or chemically based, you know, bonding.
If you've ever experienced it, it's one of the most wonderful feelings in the world.
Moms who've had babies in NICU tell me that, and they say it's just incredibly powerful. So what can happen with disruption is, you know, in any situation of bonding disruption or attachment disruption, there can be repair. So that's the important thing. We need to understand that relationships can be repaired. And sometimes moms and babies or dads and babies have to be separated for a period of time. So that does happen. So we come back together and we spend time. One of the hardest things that we do as parents is to try to be present. How do we just be in that moment with our child? Caregiving is incredibly challenging. It's incredibly stressful. We don't always feel adequate. In fact, I think we feel inadequate more than we feel adequate. So we don't get much reinforcement from perhaps our social support network, if we have one. I don't think we get a lot of reinforcement from society in general. I don't think the work is necessarily as valued as it should be. And so where's the feedback? You know, you need that reassurance. When you're developing your sense of identity, that's also part of bonding too. You're developing a sense of who you are as a parent. And if this is your first experience parenting, that's a whole process. You know, you're adding in a whole other component to your identity.
Can a baby bond with more than one person? I think some moms worry that the baby's spending a lot of time with the au pair or at the daycare,
right.
And they worry that their bond is being compromised because the baby is bonding with somebody else. So can babies bond with others?
Babies can bond with other human beings, and they should bond with other people, right? I mean, we want to send the message to our babies that we support them, right? That the world is ready for them, that the world is going to take care of them, and that they can feel secure and that they can feel trust in the world in general, right? But in terms of moms feeling a little bit, I don't know if I'll say threatened or just feeling a little bit not as self-assured about the relationship, the very, very, very special relationship that they have with their baby. A mom was talking this morning about just, you know, a moment where she went to hold the baby who was fussy, and the baby just stopped crying immediately. And it made her feel good, even though she also could kind of see objectively, oh, but then did it make the other person feel badly? So I think moms do worry about that. In terms of attachment theory and attachment understanding, what we know is that really there's a primary caregiver. It's usually one or two people. So if there's two parents in the home, there's going to be a really, really, really strong bond with those two parents. And so even if the child is in, you know, out of home care, or there's somebody coming in to care for the child, even 5 days a week, 6 days a week, the baby still knows who are these primary caretakers. So it's really important to just understand that your smell, your touch, your voice, these are all things that are so special and really magical to a baby. Your baby knew you for 9.5 months before anybody else knew them. So it really is very special. And I hope parents will feel assured by that.
Let me ask this. As we move out of the infant stage and attachment has been established, and maybe we move into adolescence, is that bond still there? And is that bond still important between a mother and a child?
Oh, it's critical. And all of the data show in terms of protecting children against some of the harmful environmental issues, substances, or, you know, different peer pressures, that the relationship is still key. Now, what does change is the cues are very different, right? The cues are different. So the child is giving you different information. In fact, during early adolescence, they're saying, stay away, you know, don't come in, you know, keep out, all of these messages. So they're sending these messages. So we have to figure out ways to keep that relationship connected. It might be, maybe it's in the car. They give you a little window where they're ready to talk about something, and you just have to grab it. So I think every stage of development is complex. It's challenging. You know, I love the series of books, Louise Bates Ames. This is the Gassell Institute for Child Development right here in Connecticut. And Arnold Gassell, I mean, this guy, he was the nation's first school psychologist, just incredible. And they produce a series of books. This was in the late 60s. But they are so spot on. They have a little paperback for each year. And I love these books, but they help you to just kind of understand a little bit about where the child is at so that you can adjust how you respond to what their developmental needs are. This is critical. You don't necessarily have to go crazy on reading everything about child development or become an expert in child development. You have to become an expert in your child, be flexible, be willing to sort of, you know, read what they're saying and adapt and change. That might mean changing your philosophy about certain things, you know, having the child always have certain clothes for mass or whatever it might be. You know, you have to be flexible.
Anything you want to say to the moms this morning as we close out this interview?
Thank you. You know, what I want to say to mothers is you are incredibly, incredibly valuable. And I hope that at some time during this journey in parenthood, you will be able to look at yourself and recognize how incredibly significant you are to the life of your child or your children. I just think that the process of motherhood, of adjusting to motherhood, is just such an incredibly intense, often painful experience. And I just hope that moms will recognize how incredibly amazing they are and how necessary. And I think if we can feel empowered as moms in our role, it's going to help us in our relationships. It's going to help us feel, you know, stronger in who we are. And it's going to give us some energy to help other moms too.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Jennifer Wonderful. Vendetti, who is with the University of Connecticut Health Center. She's an expert in bonding and nurturing. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
On the way, we'll talk about a woman's health after she's had a baby, her mental health. It's Rich Answers from the Conference of Churches and Light 100.5 WRCH. Happy Mother's Day. You're listening to Rich Answers. I'm Carol Vassar Pettit. With me today on Rich Answers is Kathy Novak. She is a clinical research therapist and social worker with the University of Connecticut Health Center in Farmington. It's Mother's Day, and this is probably a topic that a lot of mothers don't want to face, and it's called postpartum depression. So let me throw out the obvious question. What is postpartum depression? How do you determine if somebody is in the middle of that kind of depression after having a baby?
Well, postpartum depression is a very serious condition. It happens to many mothers. Actually, 10 to 15% of new mothers do get postpartum depression. It is different than the baby blues, which people, I think, are more familiar with. Baby blues last only about 2 weeks max. Postpartum depression lasts longer and needs to be treated. It's caused by neurotransmitters in the brain that are out of balance and hormonal changes, stress, new lifestyle changes, social problems that a family encounters, lack of sleep, lots of different reasons, we think. But no one knows for sure why people get postpartum depression. But many mothers, as I said, experience it, and it's very serious, and it needs to be dealt with.
Help me to define the way I would feel with the baby blues, which is normal, and postpartum depression. How would I be able to identify that in myself if I had just had a baby and I was still feeling blue many weeks afterwards? Is it the length of time? Is it the depth of the feeling? What is it?
Yes, it's a very good question. Baby blues, I had them myself. I was in the hospital room, and I was just crying, and I didn't know why. I had this beautiful baby, and I was at a special luncheon at the hospital provided, and I was crying over my steak, and I said, "What is going on?" And then when I got home, it progressively got better. So and by 5 or 6 days, I was fine. So that was the baby blues, just feeling sometimes agitated, sometimes irritable, sad, just not knowing, you know, something is wrong or knowing something is wrong. Postpartum depression, if it lasts longer than the 2 weeks, it needs to be dealt with because that's indicative of, yeah, that you your feelings are the same and it's continuing. And that's when you should talk to a doctor and get a referral for some help.
How does it manifest? Is it something that the woman herself would recognize, or is it more likely that the people who are around her, maybe her partner or her family members, would recognize first?
Actually, that's another good question, because both are true. The woman herself cries a lot more than she normally does. She feels irritable. She has difficulty making decisions. She feels confused and distracted. She has feelings that she can't be a good mother. Sometimes she worries excessively about her baby. Even sometimes moms feel like they could hurt their babies.
That's an awful, awful, awful feeling. So is it the mom who says to the doctor, maybe at that 6 week checkup, I'm still not 100% and I'm feeling blue still and I think I might have an issue?
Absolutely. And sometimes partners do detect it too. You're a lot more irritable than usual, or her sleeping patterns are off, her eating patterns are off. She feels like she has to eat all the time, or she doesn't eat at all. Or her sleep disturbance, especially, you know, she can't fall back to sleep after waking up. And so if she shares that, if she has a supportive partner, she can get the help she needs quicker. If not, hopefully a doctor will pick it up at the 6 week, or she will herself say, yes, I have some a problem, something's going on.
What's the treatment for postpartum depression? Once it's recognized, what can be done about it?
There are various things that could be done. I myself do cognitive behavioral therapy with new moms, and that is a protocol of skills and thought recognition and evaluating thoughts for validity and for usefulness. And we together, we go through these sessions and we are able to depict what it is that she's thinking, what are the thoughts behind the sadness, behind the frustration, behind the irritability or the anger that she feels. And together we work towards feeling more balanced and feeling more whole.
Are some women more vulnerable to this than others? Maybe they've had a history of depression, or perhaps there's a history of it in the family. Are women who are breastfeeding more likely than women who are bottle feeding to have postpartum depression? What's the gist on that?
The gist is that if a woman has had serious premenstrual syndrome, or a previous pregnancy where she had postpartum depression, or depression at all before, she's at greater risk for developing postpartum depression. Yes.
Is medication ever indicated?
Yes. Sometimes medication is, in fact, coupled with therapy. In fact, that's the best course, when you can couple for persons who have treatment-resistant depression especially. And those are moms who don't get help early on enough. It's very important to catch it early. It's very important to get treated so subsequent bouts of depression do not get worse or not resistant to treatment later on.
Different pregnancies. Maybe this is the third pregnancy. Is it in the third birth, the third child? Is it more likely to happen as successive pregnancies and babies are born?
If she was not treated before, if she did have it, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. If she had postpartum depression before, it's more likely that she'll have it subsequently. Yeah.
It's easy to miss, though, isn't it?
Very easy.
With the upheaval in the household, a new baby, hours, baby crying all hours of the night, needing to be fed, it's very easy to miss, isn't it?
Right. When you look at all the changes and people coming in and visiting and you're supposed to be happy and you accept meals and then they leave and then you're still and you're there alone with your child and you're thinking, oh my God, where are they going? Am I knowing what I'm doing? And then I'm feeling, I'm crying and Absolutely. It's very easy to miss. It's very easy to miss. In fact, I think more has to be done at 6 weeks postpartum and also at checkups and also with family members. I think more education needs to be done in general about postpartum depression.
Is there a stigma still associated with postpartum depression? Because there is mm-hmm. with depression. I would think that it would carry over to postpartum depression as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And I think, Carol, it's because of what they're dealing with. What they have new babies. They're beautiful. People are oohing and aahing and visiting, just as I said. And I think that that really has a lot to do with people feeling that way, feeling that I can't say anything. I'm supposed to be happy. I can't let them know that inside I'm in turmoil and I need help.
And they really should. They really should reach out to people. Can you give me an example, without naming names, of course, because that would be illegal, but give me an example of a patient who you have met who has successfully overcome postpartum depression.
Thankfully, I have a lot of examples. This treatment seems to work very well. I'm very happy about that. So I've had a lot of I've been grateful for a lot of experiences that I've been able to journey with these women through their depression. One mom comes to mind. She had a college education, and then she got pregnant in her last semester, and she thought that her life was over. She felt that she was never going to accomplish anything because she did something that she didn't think she would ever do. That wasn't her. That happened to other young women. Didn't happen to her. And she had a very, very terrible time in trying to negotiate that. And then when we found her and she came into our study, we were very happy about that. But it took several sessions for us to go through those feelings, for us to examine what it was that she was thinking and how she saw her future. And the fact of the matter is, in the early part of their treatment, she saw no future. She saw her thoughts were all negative. I now will be as one of the others who don't do anything with their lives. And here I have a college degree. And why did this have to happen to me? She was so guilt-ridden and so stuck with being embarrassed and ashamed that she had this baby. So we went together through the journey of discovering the things that she could do and the love that she had for her child and the bond that they shared. She just needed somebody to point those things out. She needed some positive recognition because, as you can imagine, in many families, people get stigmatized.
Absolutely, especially if it was an unexpected pregnancy, maybe the partner isn't around. Mm-hmm. Can be a very difficult situation to start with, and then the hormones get going and the neurotransmitters don't transmit what they need to, and
exactly.
There you are in postpartum depression. You mentioned a study. Tell me a little bit about that before we mm-hmm. finish up today.
We've been engaged at UConn Health Center for 3 years. It'll be done in June, a randomized clinical trial, control trial, that we've had moms in the treatment group and in the control group, and I see all the moms who are randomized into the treatment group. We work in conjunction with the Children's Trust Fund and with the Center for Social Research at the University of Hartford. And they do our data collection and they run the trial. But I am the therapist assigned to the project. And I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with many moms who've been randomized into the treatment group.
Kathy Novak, thank you so much. From the UConn Health Center in Farmington, you are a clinical research therapist and social worker. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Coming up, our Sunday morning reflection with the Reverend Dr. Shelley Best, President and CEO of the Conference of Churches. You're listening to Rich Answers on Light 100.5 WRCH.